Hello, I'm Kerry Lonergan. Welcome to the Weekly Grill. It's brought to you by Beef Central and Elanco Animal Health. Today, we're talking about cattle prices. And who better to talk about prices with than Matt Dalgleish? He's currently an economist and a meat and livestock industry analyst with Thomas Elder. He loves talking about the costs involved in getting the meat to market. Chris Howie is our second guest. He's currently the business development manager at Stockco. He has a terrific background through the industry. He was once a shearer, then he was actually a boner in a meatworks before working his way up to be the national development manager at Elders. Stockco, of course, is a specialist investment finance company. Both of you, welcome to The Grill.
Morning, Kerry.
How are you, Kerry?
Chris, we'll start with you first because you've got an extraordinary price to report that was attained recently in Tasmania, some young weaners.
Yeah, we were down at the Piranha sale for the nutrient sale, and there was some 190-kilo weaners down there. They made $1,560. It was a good line. There were 71 of them. They were very well bred, but worked out at 818 cents. Big hit for steers, and being steers, you've only sort of got one way to go with them.
Yeah, that's amazing. Matt, what do you think of that?
Oh, look, it's incredible, but I think with some of the rainfall we've been seeing, particularly in the northern parts, Kerry, it's probably no surprise we're starting to see some good prices creep in again.
Yes, but do those prices make any sense at all, prices like that?
Oh, look, I mean, it depends on the weight, I think, of the cattle to a degree, Kerry, if there's any money in it. Certainly, you know, you look at something like where the ecky's sitting, and for the lighter kind of ecky down around that 200 to 300 kilo live weight, then there's probably still money at those prices with the finished steer up at 370 odd live weight. But for the heavier kind of store cattle, I struggle to see how you can make some money out of that, to be honest.
Yes, but we've been seeing these prices for some time, and prices we saw 6 or 8 weeks ago we thought were amazing, and they've gone up even further. Doesn't seem to be stopping.
Yeah, it's amazing. Grass drives activity, and it always has in Australia, and this rain through New South Wales and into Queensland, I don't know whether it can go higher, but it's going to really sparkle this demand job up. We've already seen supply shut down. One of the major processors in Queensland, they cancelled their kill for today. Just because access to cattle is really starting to push this along. And places like in the central through Claremont that haven't had much rain, it's been quite patchy. They've now had sort of 200 mils plus. It's actually a game changer for the Queensland market.
It is indeed. I've been noticing this rain, and inevitably there will be fewer and fewer cattle on the market. Is it similar in New South Wales, Matt?
Look, I think that kind of situation, a tight supply, and New South Wales is a good one, Kerry. I've heard some rumours anecdotally, actually, that even though the drought period and they kind of turned off a lot of animals, producers have actually, you know, had to address some of their debt in those areas in terms of what they had to carry through feeding. So even though there's an incentive to rebuild, there's some there that are, you know, kind of wanting to balance the rebuild out with actually trying to pay down some of their debts. So, and that, it's hard to refuse these prices for some. So I think what it's meaning is that it's going to take a slower and longer rebuild.
Now, these feeder cattle have been off the boil a fraction, but they appear to be coming back. Or has that already changed enough?
Look, I'd suggest that we saw that what I would say that the normal trend, a softening in price at this time of year, because as Matt said, there's a debt pay down requirement. There's also, you know, that you don't want to blow your cattle out the wrong end of the weight range. But this rain, I think you will see just another spike in the market. You know, it was easing back. I actually think you're going to see it go again for feeders.
Matt?
Yeah, look, I tend to agree, Kerry. I think there is a chance for a bit of a spike, but you know, if you take something like the ecky as a benchmark, I'm struggling to see it. It might creep above 900 briefly, but I'm struggling to see it too much beyond 900. But I certainly think we're in for a little bit of a run coming into winter.
Yes, I suppose it depends on supply, and while it rains, there'll be fewer and fewer cattle.
Well, that's one of the things we looked at Thomas Elder Markets recently, Kerry, was that the female slaughter ratio. And so the data came in for the end of December 2020, the final quarter, and it actually shows, so that's a good indicator to see if we're in a rebuild or not. And according to the data, we're still not quite at a rebuild. You know, we're still at kind of destocking stages in terms of where that female slaughter ratio is. I've got some preliminary data. You can look at restocker activity and spreads, and also the price spread for female and breeding cattle. And that indicates that as of now, we're probably in a rebuild, but we won't really know for sure until the ABS data comes out in, I think it's May, to tell us what's happening in this first quarter.
Yeah, there's some items printed recently about cattle numbers, suggesting that, in fact, we might have overestimated the total number of especially male cattle in Australia.
Yeah, I'd tend to agree with that. On the back of what Matt said, it's quite opportune, this discussion. We've seen a lot of producers that have got the capacity to take cattle on, but they're not at present in regards to financing. They're actually standing out of the market. And, you know, as I don't know when is the right time to step back in, but I'm with Matt. I think we're still seeing a lot of females being sold to meet the repayment schedules of post-drought.
Yes, look, no one rings a bell to tell you the prices are topped out yesterday. You should sell at the best available price. But look, how far can it go? What is going to happen? All of you have seen booms and busts before. How far into this boom are we at present?
I would have said without Queensland's rain, pre-Christmas, I thought maybe we'd see a correction in April. This rain, I actually think we're going to go into the spring now. We've watched Western Australia. They had the grain through the Great Southern. Their cattle prices are screaming ahead at present compared to where they were post-Christmas. Look, there is an absolute disjoint between the international beef price and what we're paying for cattle to go onto grass in Australia.
Yes, Matt, there is a disconnect, isn't there, between the price of cattle and what our exporters are trying to get and the price of cattle overseas, and we're with our main competitors, of course.
Yeah, definitely, Kerry. I think there's a couple of, you know, significant headwinds. You've got obviously that broader cattle price globally, where we're expensive compared to all of our competitors pretty much. You've also got the overlay of an Aussie dollar that continues to appreciate, Kerry, and that's not helping. And then, you know, if you look at something like, you know, and Chris alluded to it before, the processor difficulties we're seeing and processors that are struggling with this tight supply and indeed, you know, registering margins according to our modelling, the worst we've ever seen in, you know, that monthly margin we put out at TEM for processor or beef processors. It's the worst it's ever been in two decades, just this last month, about $349 a head loss. So all of those things are creating big headwinds, certainly for the finished end of the market, I think. And without the finished end of the market being able to go too much higher, I think that will put a bit of a cap on the store market. But the rain, like I said before, I'm with Chris on this. I think the store market could probably rally a bit more, you know, because of this rain and because there's still, you know, kind of interest to restock. But I think it's only got so far it can travel without the finished end going up with it.
I find that amazing. Could you repeat that, please? I'm not sure I heard you correctly. Did you say processors are losing $349 a head?
That's according to that beef processor model we put out on Thomas Alder Markets. We do it pretty much every month. And so I've got monthly data going back to 2000 on that. And, yeah, the January figure got revised up. So it was 311. But sometimes you get some late data coming through from beef export pricing or the co-product pricing that we use to calculate, you know, what the revenue are. It's a theoretical margin, of course, Kerry, but it kind of matches up with what we're hearing anecdotally from the processors. It's certainly, when you overlay the model against previous times when it's been negative to this degree, it does match up with when we see processor closures as well. So, look, we think it's a fairly good replication. It's obviously not, you know, it's not an individual processor, it's reflective of the broader market. You might have some that aren't losing as much as that. You might have some that potentially are losing more, depending upon their setup. But you know, it is definitely showing that this is unprecedented times for the beef processor.
I'll get back to you on possible closures in a moment. But Chris, what do you think of that figure? $349 a head loss for every processing?
I'm probably a little bit unique in the fact that I've worked through Meatworks, and every Meatworks has got a different set of end market. In Australia, we tend to not consider the offal component. And look, I haven't got the numbers. Matt's done a lot of analysis. I've followed that through. But in saying it, the beef job is just on fire. But then if you look at the sheep and lamb job, I actually think we're in a very traditional cycle with sheep and lamb, and I can see some real upside for mutton and lamb over the next 3 months, basically into the middle of July, because it's just following trend. COVID has changed the world in regard to marketing, and I think this is going to put the pressure on the Australian beef industry. We're already watching South American meat and Indian meat pushing into Indonesia on the back of price. And once those markets open up to non-traditional sources, it's very hard to wind that back afterwards.
So in essence, you're agreeing with Matt on those figures, $349 a head, but also a broader impact on the, in the long term?
Yeah, definitely. I think what's happening is that we're seeing. I know we've talked about globalization for a long time. We're actually seeing markets that were never under threat from South America or North America. All of a sudden, they've come right into play. And as we see, we haven't had a boat out of Townsville for 3 weeks into Vietnam. You've got Indonesia that are desperately looking for supply of beef into their country, and the pressure points. This rain, I think they were just easing the price off into April. This rain will, I think, spike it again, which will put more pressure on supply into Indonesia.
They were going gangbusters last year. In fact, they sent out more cattle than Darwin, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
But yep, not now.
Exactly right.
Let's take a short break now to hear a message from our podcast partner, Elanco Animal Health. This podcast is brought to you by Trisulfan, the only product that provides four-way wound care for calves following common animal husbandry practices. Trisulfan is scientifically proven to deliver immediate and long-lasting pain relief, minimize bleeding, protect against infection, and assist wound healing. Contact Elanco and find out why Trisulfan is a better choice for pain relief in calves. Welcome back to the Weekly Grill on Beef Central. Today I'm speaking with Matt Dogleish from Thomas Elder Markets and Chris Howey from StockCo, and subject, prices. So what about Indian buffalo meat coming into Indonesia? Is that, I've always thought it's a short-term fix and they much prefer the fresher meat, and the fresher meat would win out in the end. But essentially, I guess it gets to a matter of price.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's right. And there was a stage there where it was quite competitive. You know, I guess the last time around we saw this kind of wet season, 16-17, but then it was quick to fizzle out again to a degree there, Kerry. So I think there is a definite preference for the Australian product over there. But when we're expensive as we are, then, you know, your customers are going to also consider other options. And I think it's not just the Indonesians. It's, it's a lot of our customers at the moment that are looking at other options.
Yes, I think the warning bells are ringing. Now, let's talk about lot feeders. How are they travelling at the moment? Are they actually breaking even or making some money?
We have got a lot feeder margin we look at as well, Kerry, across a couple of different kind of trade lengths. The longer kind of fed animals, I think there's still some money there. With the recent rally in grain pricing, just because of some of the issues coming out of Russia and the export duties applied in Russia kind of got the grain market racing a bit internationally, and that flowed through, even though despite we had a very good harvest this season just gone, which probably should have suppressed prices a bit, the global picture was beneficial to Australian producers there. And so it lifted prices locally as well because of that global picture. So I think that's kind of putting some pressure again on feedlotters, just with the grain prices heading up because of those international factors. So yeah, certainly the shorter grain fed trades, there's a bit less in it. But I don't think they're losses yet, but they're certainly narrowing down to those levels.
Chris, that sounds a reasonable assessment. Do you agree?
Yeah, it does. And look, we've seen the business model change in feedlotting. There's a lot more defined margin. So into the supermarket trade, they need the meat. When you're buying in, it's open. It's open book feedlotting. They know what your cost to feed is, and they know what the margin needs to be to keep you in business. No one wants to see the feedlotters go out of business, because that's the rubber band within the industry that fills up the supply holes. And I think there is definitely pressure on that higher end market export, but in regards to the domestic market, it's quite strong at present and has actually diversified. They've spread over more areas instead of just having single supply locations.
Yes, I can myself notice that there's some pressure on that high end product, because I've been told that a lot of meat that was destined for the export market is now being fed into the domestic market. Is that correct, Chris?
Yeah, yes, it is. And look, we've seen and this isn't new. We've seen this in the past, whether it be lamb or whether it be beef. You've only got to go back 12 months ago, and we had, at the start of COVID, we had 120-day, 150-day rump coming onto the wholesale market at $7.50 to $8, like really, really cheap. And you saw pork as in the rolled boneless legs, they're on the market at $6. So this isn't new, and it's a cyclic thing. You know, if we lose a market, you see that export meat come back into domestic trade.
Matt, that seems a fair assessment. I've noticed some of the better cuts are very, very cheap relative to in historic terms.
It definitely was. And as Chris has mentioned that, I did look back and think fondly. My wife was bringing home some fantastic cuts of meat during that time. So I can't disagree there at all, Kerry.
No one's complaining, I don't think, especially those lovers of beef, and there are plenty of them. Now, 100-day cattle, are the lot feeders making money there?
Better lot feeders, economy of scale comes into play. So your feeding cost, if you're above 80% occupancy, the ration did come off. And I think there's still a margin, but in saying that, it would be fairly tight. And Matt's got some pretty good analysis that they've put up recently. It's easy to say that someone's making money or losing money, but it comes down to the individual feedlot and their conversion rates, that the science behind their feed is a real game changer for feedlots at this point in time.
Matt?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, totally. And I think that there is still money in that kind of 100-day end, but it's tight. And yeah, can't disagree with anything Chris has said there. I think it's very solid.
Now, the processes, it was briefly mentioned earlier on that there's a possibility of them closing down. Is that a real reality that they would close down or lessen shifts? What are they going to do? They can't be losing all that money day in and day out year in for the next 6 months, can they?
I was talking to a major processor on Monday, and I just asked about the lamb job. They didn't see the correction, and they weren't ready for the correction. They had actually started to go long in setting up supply into the winter. But in saying that, he said, we're not going to extra shift. So the supply and demand factor is pretty much balancing itself out at present. But above $8 on lamb, he said, we potentially lose 20% of our international market once we head towards $9. Now, all of us think that the lamb job's it'll keep going up until the back end of June. In regards to closures, the issue we've got at present is skilled staff. No Meatworks wants to lose their slaughter floor. And you can find people to stack boxes, but in regards to your slaughtermen and your slaughter women, it's really hard to keep them, and I think that's the reason a lot of works are still ticking over, even though they're accruing a loss.
Matt?
Yeah, look, I agree again with what Chris is saying there, and I think the reluctance, even and we look historically at when you see processes go through these tough times, there's enough of them in the data to see, and you can actually overlay, whether it's temporary or permanent closure, you can overlay the closures that we see during those times when we have extended losses. So it is, without a doubt, something that's on the cards. I think we've already seen one New South Wales processor came out in December, Kerry, and announced in December they'd be shutting for 8 months as of January. So they're out. We've seen Greenham's down in Tongala. I think their query was more around the reduction in coal cows coming out of the dairy space there because of some of the move out of dairy. They're just not seeing the throughput there to warrant three lines, so they've reduced down to one. Whether that's a pricing margin issue or whether that's a bit more about something specific to the dairy in that sector, it could be either way. But certainly when you look at that historic, I wouldn't be surprised to see this season that we see more processes winding down, and whether it's reduced shift or whether it's closure for a temporary period of time, hopefully not permanent closures, because I think we're in for a long haul in terms of this loss environment. I think it's going to hang around for most of this year, at least until maybe the last quarter of 2021. So hopefully they've got deep pockets, because it's not good to see any part of the supply chain suffering like this for an extended period. It's not good for the industry, mate.
And I'm with Matt on that. I think that a lot of the processes will go into what you'd call structured shutdown for maintenance. like they're good at managing what they do. But I'm with Matt. I think we're going to need the spring flush to actually bring some pricing pressure back into the market. When it's green everywhere, it actually, it's harder to do business than when you've got somewhere that's a bit dry, because you can create destination. So it balances the pricing structure out.
One of the commonalities I hear when talking about processes and shutting down is the danger of losing trained staff, because they are as rare as hen's teeth.
Definitely. That's right. Yeah. Sorry, Chris. I think your very first podcast, Kerry, outlined that exactly. One of the saving graces at the moment is, you know, that staff are tight as well. But you know, it's just the fact that the cattle market's also tight, and to a degree the sheep and lamb market's tight in terms of supply. So if we had a lot of you know, kind of extra production and turn off, they wouldn't have the staff to fill it anyway. But, you know, it's still a real concern for processors, and part of the reason why, you know, they're reluctant to shut down is because they just can't lose that skilled staff, particularly in those regional areas where you just won't get them back.
Great to talk, boys. Matt Dalgleish from Thomas Elder Markets and Chris Harry from StockCo.
Cheers, Kerry.
See you.
And thank you for joining me today. Until next time, I'm Kerry Lonigan, and this is The Weekly Grill, brought to you by Beef Central and our podcast partner, Elanco Animal Health.